Good morning. My name is Taka, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Pason Systems Inc.'s second quarter 2020 earnings call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. The contents of today's call are protected by copyright and may not be reproduced without the prior written consent of Pason Systems Inc. Please note the advisories located at the end of the press release issued by Pason Systems yesterday, which describe forward-looking information. Certain information about the company that is discussed on today's call may constitute forward-looking information. Additional information about Pason Systems, including the risk factors relevant to the company, can be found in its annual information form. Thank you. Mr. Kessler, you may begin your conference.
Thank you. Good morning, and welcome to Pason's second quarter 2020 conference call. With me here in Calgary today is Jon Faber, our Chief Financial Officer. I will start with the highlights of the second quarter. Jon will dive into the details of our financial performance. I will close with a brief perspective on the outlook for the industry and for Pason, and we will then take any questions. Highlights. The simultaneous drop in demand and increase in supply of crude oil towards the end of the first quarter of this year led to a dramatic decline in oil prices. As a result, we saw large cuts to E&P capital expenditures, with disproportionately higher cuts for drilling and completions. The number of land drilling rigs active across North America dropped by three-quarters in just 3 months. Activity drops across Latin America mirrored those in North America, while activity in Australia and the Middle East was somewhat more resilient. Pason's second quarter financial results reflect this extraordinarily challenging environment. Revenue for the quarter was $26.8 million, a decrease of 63% from the second quarter of 2019. The company posted an adjusted EBITDA loss of $848,000. Free cash flow decreased 8% to $30 million. Pason recorded a net loss for the period of $4.5 million, or $0.05 per share. In response to market conditions and the uncertainty regarding the trajectory of our industry, Pason reduced capital expenditures by over 80% in the second quarter compared to the previous year. In addition, we executed significant operating expense reductions during the period. Pason's balance sheet remains in pristine condition. As a result of the significant reductions in CapEx and the release of working capital as the business shrank during the period, cash and short-term investments increased from the first quarter and stood at $176 million on June 30th. There is no interest-bearing debt on our balance sheet. I will now turn the call over to Jon for a more detailed look at the financials.
Thank you, Marcel. Pason's second quarter financial results reflected the drastic downturn in industry activity as a result of the global COVID-19 pandemic. North American drilling industry activity decreased by 64% from the second quarter of 2019, and many international markets also saw significant activity decreases. Consolidated revenue of $26.8 million was down 63% from the second quarter of 2019 and down 64% sequentially from the first quarter. Pason posted an adjusted EBITDA loss of $848,000 compared to a positive adjusted EBITDA of $30.7 million in the second quarter of 2019 and $33.3 million in the first quarter of 2020. The notable items between the adjusted EBITDA loss in the quarter and positive EBITDA of $5.8 million were restructuring costs incurred in the quarter, offset by government assistance programs related to the current pandemic and the previously announced termination of our lease in Colorado. Capital expenditures of $800,000 were down 81% from 2019 second quarter CapEx of $4.2 million. The significant reduction in capital expenditures, together with a $25.5 million decrease in working capital from the end of the first quarter, contributed to free cash flow of $29.9 million in the quarter. In the second quarter, Pason recorded a $4.5 million net loss compared to net income of $9.2 million in the second quarter of 2019. For the first half of the year, consolidated revenue totaled $100.8 million, down 35% from the prior year period. Adjusted EBITDA for the six-month period was $32.5 million, a 55% decrease compared to 2019. Free cash flow of $52.8 million for the first half of 2020 was up 60% from the prior year, driven by lower capital expenditures and a release of working capital. Net income attributable for Pason for the 6 months ended June 30, 2020, of $12.4 million, or 15 cents per share, was down 56% from the comparable period a year ago. I will turn to review the financial results of each of our business units. Drilling industry activity in the United States was down 63% from the second quarter of 2019. Pason's revenue for the U.S. business unit of $21.1 million was down 61% from the prior year, as a 280 basis point increase in market share offset a 7% decrease in revenue per EDR day. Sequentially, U.S. revenue decreased 53%. U.S. segment gross profit decreased by 82% from the second quarter of 2019 to $5.2 million as a result of the revenue decrease and the company's largely fixed cost structure. Segment gross profit decreased by 77% sequentially from the first quarter. In Canada, the year-over-year decrease in industry activity was more pronounced at 73%. As a result, Canadian revenue decreased 71% to $2.7 million in the second quarter. Sequentially, revenue was down 86% from the first quarter of 2020. Reported market share was 690 basis points higher year-over-year in the second quarter at 94%, while revenue per EDR day decreased by 18% to $1,060 per day. During periods of very low oil and gas drilling activity, the contribution of other drilling activity to our Canadian business unit distorts our reported metrics. Specifically, these rigs serve to increase reported market share while putting downward pressure on reported revenue per EDR day. Year over year, cash operating costs decreased by $2 million in the second quarter against the $6.5 million revenue decrease. As a result, the Canadian business unit posted a segment gross loss of $3.4 million. For the six-month period, revenue decreased 19% to $22.4 million, and segment gross profit decreased 35% to $5.7 million. International revenue of $3 million was down 70% from the second quarter of 2019 and down 67% sequentially from the first quarter, as many international markets saw significant decreases in drilling activity, most notably Argentina. Revenue of $12.3 million for the first 6 months of the year was 36% lower than the same period of 2019. A segment gross loss of $1.3 million in the quarter was down from segment gross profit of $3.4 million in the second quarter of 2019. Year-to-date, international business unit segment gross profit totaled $1.6 million, down 75% from the prior year. In summary, our financial results for the second quarter were reflective of the challenging conditions which continue to face our industry. In that context, we continue to carefully manage both our operating and capital cost outlays. In the second quarter, we undertook a restructuring of our business to adjust to anticipated lower activity levels for the foreseeable future. Given the nature of our business and our cost structure, we are not scaling our business to match the anticipated trough levels of activity and have made the strategic decision to retain critical organizational capabilities through the deepest depths of the current crisis in order to strengthen our competitive position as the industry recovers. We reduced capital expenditures to $800,000 in the second quarter, down 81% from 2019 levels. We continue to expect we will spend up to $10 million on capital expenditures in 2020. Appropriate management of our strong balance sheet remains our top priority through the current economic crisis. Our board of directors has declared a quarterly dividend of 5 cents per share. As at June 30th, we had positive working capital of $182 million, including $176 million of cash and cash equivalents. We expect to face extremely challenging industry conditions over the next few quarters. However, we do so from a position of excellent competitive and financial strength. And I will now turn the call back to Marcel for his comments on our outlook.
Thank you, John. As John alluded to, we expect that oil field activity, especially in North America and South America, will remain very low in the second half of 2020 before a slow recovery starts in 2021. We are fully prepared for that. With our leaner organization and clean balance sheet, Pason is well positioned. We will continue to allocate capital to safeguard the long-term prospects of Pason's core drilling-related business and of Energy Toolbase, our foothold in the solar and energy storage market. Our EDR market share in the United States is now firmly over 65%, a great base to build from when the industry recovers. On the product side, customers continue to be impressed with Pason DAS, our drilling automation package. Drilling performance improves considerably when the optimization system is used. Our PVT smart alarms are gaining traction with key customers, and the new Data Hub dashboard has been introduced with great feedback from users. We continue to invest significant resources in R&D, IT, and technical support to respond to customer requests, improve existing products, and develop new products. We believe that this environment provides an opportunity for Pason to become even stronger by leapfrogging competition in terms of technology and service. Energy Toolbase has made good progress with positive momentum on software subscriptions and new battery control systems sold. With the industry-leading software package to model the economics and build proposals for solar and energy storage, that means battery projects, combined with the IEMS control system and Energy Data Hub products, Energy Toolbase is well positioned for meaningful long-term growth in this promising market. Finally, I should mention that this is my 36th and last quarterly Pason conference call. On July 22nd, we announced that I will retire as President and CEO effective October 1st. I will succeed Jim Hill as chair of our board of directors. John Faber has been appointed to succeed me in the CEO role. John joined Pason as chief financial officer in 2014. Over the past 6 years, in addition to the finance function, John has successfully led supply chain, IT, and important elements of software development. I am fully confident that with our passionate employees under John's tenacious leadership, our unique platform, and our financial strength, Pason will achieve long-term success. I am humbled and grateful for the 9 years I was able to serve Pason as president and CEO, and I look forward to continuing to support our great company as chair of the board. It is worth mentioning at this point that none of the leadership changes were driven by the belief that the path we're on or the way we are allocating resources needs to change significantly. As a result, we do not expect any abrupt changes to our strategy. That said, we are living through unprecedented upheaval in our industry that is creating new challenges and new opportunities. We will keep our finger on the pulse of our customers and the industry and react as needed to counter these challenges and seize attractive opportunities. We would now be happy to take any questions.
As a reminder, to ask a question, you will need to press star 1 on your telephone. To withdraw your question, please press the pound key. Please stand by while we compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from Michael Robertson of National Bank Financial. Your line is open.
Hey, good morning, gents, and Marcel.
Morning, Michael.
Hey, John, congrats on your last call here, and John, congrats to you as well on the appointment. Diving right in, it looks like your U.S. market share has been creeping up over the last few quarters. I just wanted to talk about the competitive landscape there. Given the severity of the downturn and its expected duration, do you anticipate somewhat less competitive environment coming out of the downturn. Is that happening already? Love to hear your thoughts there.
So I think you're right, Michael. It's Marcel here. We saw our market share in the United States creep up, but it's probably not so much a result of us gaining new customers or new rigs, but it seems as if the financial strength of our customers seems to allow our customers to continue drilling, whereas some of our competitors seem to have a bit weaker balance sheets. So it's simply or primarily a result of customer mix. We do not really anticipate the competitive intensity in the United States to decrease.
Okay. That's a helpful answer. Thank you. You had previously mentioned expectations for Q4 2020 as being the most challenging quarter for you guys. Has that viewpoint changed fundamentally, or would you still sort of go with that, or has it gotten better or worse?
I think it has. It's not gotten worse. I think our perspective has probably shifted a bit in that we believe that drilling activity, at least in North America, will stay pretty flat from where we are today. So based on what we can see today, we don't expect a further decline. So I think, yeah, I think it's probably we expect to be around the low point now.
Okay, that's good to hear. Last one for me, just want to ask how we should think about the impact of the CEWS going forward.
Yeah, Michael, it's John. So those programs continue to be in place. I think the only thing I would note is that given the timing of when the program was announced and some uncertainty around who would qualify for what, we did end up accruing the March payments in the second quarter. So we actually had 4 months accrued in the quarter as opposed to three. And, you know, I think that you would expect to be a little bit lower by virtue of the fact that we would have a slightly smaller employee base on the Canadian side today as well. But so I think that the bigger impact, the short answer is it will likely be a little lower going forward, more so because we'd have 3 months accrued instead of four, and some impact as well from a slightly smaller employee base.
Got it. All right. Well, that's great. Thanks for the caller, gents, and congrats again. I'll turn it back.
Thanks, Michael.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. Your next question comes from Matthew Weeks of Industrial Alliance Securities. Your line is open.
Good morning.
Morning.
Matthew.
So looking at the cost savings, you managed to achieve on the cost side and in terms of direct costs and that, it was kind of the previous commentary was sort of that, after the reductions made in the last downturn, there probably wasn't as much to give this time around. Are you at all surprised by the amount you were able to kind of restructure on the cost side when you kind of stepped back and looked at the organization?
I don't know that I'd say we're necessarily surprised. I think there are certainly different parts of the business where we felt we had more degrees of freedom than some others, perhaps. And the other thing that's, of course, quite abnormal in a pandemic particularly is that some costs which would otherwise be essentially fixed almost become variable through the most deepest parts of the crisis. But I would expect that those would look a bit more fixed again going forward. So there's probably that effect in there as well.
Okay. Looking at sort of international revenue and basically the commentary was that for the most part, in the quarter, it sort of mirrored activity in North America. Is this something that really you expect kind of going forward with, projecting a pretty flat market here kind of through the remainder of the year, also kind of expecting similar in the international markets and then a slow recovery in 2021?
Yeah, so the international market is a few different areas, of course, right? I would say that Saudi Arabia and Australia would have been somewhat more resilient, still down, but more resilient. And South America in some countries was quite a bit slower than even North America, more significant declines. And given that the South American countries continue to be a larger part of our international business, we would expect that that would continue to be quite low for a while based on what we see today. And again, with that similar sort of trajectory and timeline that you mentioned, we would see on the North American side.
Okay. Thanks for the color on that. I think that's everything for me. I'll turn it back.
Thanks, Matthew.
Your next question comes from John Gibson of BMO Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Morning, guys.
Morning, John.
Morning, John.
Historically, you've maintained a bit of a larger fixed cost base through downturns in order to keep your service offering. I know you touched about it in your preamble there, but we've seen some commentary from producers that North American activity levels will be structurally going forward. So I guess my question is, how much are you willing to sacrifice on the margin side, at least in the short term, to maintain a fairly large operating footprint? And at what point would you look to reduce footprints in certain areas? And then lastly, do you share the view that North America will be structurally lower going forward?
Maybe take those in reverse order. So the question, do we share the view that it will be structurally lower? I think we'd share the view that it will be structurally lower than it was coming into 2020, but not that it's going to stay at the current level, right? So we do think it will improve from here, but likely not to call it exit 2019 levels at any point in the foreseeable future, right? Now, the restructuring exercise we went through, we really sort of imagined what that lower than 2019 but better than today type of environment might look like and look to get an appropriate cost structure for that type of environment. So when I mentioned in the comments that we didn't sort of restructure the business to the trough, we do expect we're going to consume some cash over the next few quarters through the depths of the crisis as we restore back to that, I don't want to call it normalized environment, but an environment that's better than today but lower than exit 2019.
Okay, great. That answers my question. Would you put a number on where you think the rig count will get back to? I mean, I know it's impossible to say, but like where have you sort of structured your business, I guess, relative to exit 2019 levels?
I think if you read a number of commentaries from people in the industry, I've seen ranges anywhere from, call it 400 to 600, and we would sort of be consistent with that range, right? Nobody's going to put a specific number, but I think that's the type of a range that we could see in the foreseeable future. That's the appropriate planning horizon.
Okay, great. That answers my question. Secondly, just on the pricing concessions, can you give an order of magnitude, and was this competitor or customer driven?
So to be clear, John, there wasn't that much in terms of new pricing concessions in the quarter. There certainly was some, but what you see particularly on the Canadian side is the disproportionate contribution of non-oil and gas rigs. And what you see on the U.S. side is more of a regional mix of where the activity slowdowns were. So certain regions where the rigs are drilling larger, deeper, more complex wells that tend to draw more Pason product, those regions would have slowed down more significantly. So it's much more an impact of mix than it would have been around price. That's not to say that price wasn't a factor, but the price is not very much of a factor relative to mix.
Okay, great. Thanks. And then just lastly, on the acquisition front, have your plans changed a little bit? Do you expect to be less aggressive just going forward over the next few quarters as you do maybe burn a bit of cash, or are you still looking at select opportunities in the same way?
Well, as my comments were earlier, we were prioritizing careful management of the balance sheet through the depths. So I don't think we would do anything through the depths of the downturn, but we also think that opportunities that will present themselves coming out of the depths may be unique opportunities to transact. So we would always be looking at potentially doing things, but I think the likelihood of doing anything in the depths is very, very low.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. And again, congrats to you, Marcel. All the best in the future.
Thank you, John.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone. Your next question comes from Jeff Federley of Peters & Co. Your line is open.
Morning, guys. A couple of clarification questions for you. First, on the Middle East side, you touched on it a minute ago in terms of the resiliency in Saudi, but where does your operational base or asset base sit in the Middle East today, and how has it been trending?
So the Middle East for us is really two fairly distinct businesses. The first one is Saudi Arabia itself, where we're operating in a 50-50 joint venture with a local partner. And that's where we have seen most resiliency for the overall drilling activity and for Pason's business as well. Now, that said, it was actually quite unprecedented that Saudi Aramco did decrease drilling somewhat, or is going to, which hasn't really happened in a long, long time, but not nearly as what we would have seen in North America or South America. And the rest of the Middle East, we operate through an entity essentially called Frontier, where we primarily serve that through a small business development office located in Dubai, but then the equipment and the technicians are essentially deployed from North America. So it's a frontier operation with no local infrastructure as such. And it would cover markets such as Oman, the United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Iraq, out of that operation. So there's really no fixed cost base associated with that as such. And that's where we would have seen much bigger declines, more along the lines of what we would have seen in North America.
And on the Saudi side, from a market share standpoint, how have you been trending?
We have been trending up, but we have nowhere near the market share as what we would have in the U.S., Canada, or Argentina.
Okay. The second question on IWS, how has the commercial deployment gone on that side?
So IWS, just as a reminder for other people listening in, is an investment we made last year. It's a minority investment we have in that company. It's a revolutionary new technology for the completion space. And as many of the people on the call will know, if anything, completions was hit even harder than drilling here in this downturn. So the number of active systems has gone down significantly. Now, that said, we believe fundamentally that the technology remains very valuable, that the workflow it enables is very important, and that the medium to long-term prospects are attractive for that business. But they have fallen on pretty hard times, again, even harder than drilling, really, given this downturn.
Given that completion crews are starting to reactivate and obviously the cost sensitivity that's in the market, is there a better opportunity today for market penetration with IWS than you had seen in the past?
I believe so. I think actually coming down of the downturn, given there will be continued cost sensitivity, I believe that it's actually probably a unique opportunity in time for IWS to grow over the next year or two.
Okay. And last question, you specifically referenced Energy Tool Base in some of your prepared remarks. I'm curious, is there a way that you see the ability to accelerate Energy Tool Base, especially given what's going on in some of the end markets that they serve?
The short answer is yes. It's a question of capital allocation, which we're going to discuss. The board and the management will discuss here after the summer. It is a complex space, though. So Energy Tool Base is primarily active in the United States. The regulatory environments, there are 50 quite distinct regulatory environments around power generation, the use of unconventionals, incentives for selling back into the grid through wholesale markets or retail incentives. So it is not easy to essentially accelerate across the board. So we'll have to pick our spaces and choose where we want to deploy our skills. ETB is still a very small company. So traditionally, they have been active primarily in California and some other select markets in the Southeast. Now we're looking to probably gain a foothold in the Northeast, primarily Massachusetts and New York. But it's almost a state-by-state deployment at this stage.
And how broad, from an overall coverage standpoint, would Energy Tool Base's platform be in terms of states covered or market right now?
So there are several distinct offerings to ETB. So the legacy ETB software as a service platform, which is software used primarily by solar and energy storage developers, to model the economics and build proposals for new projects or for retrofits in some cases. That is pretty universally applicable across the United States. And Energy Toolbase has quite a distinct skill, essentially, in having the relevant rate tariffs for the various state utilities in their platform. So that is applicable to many, many states. In terms of the control systems, that's where it gets a bit more complicated, where the control systems actually take charge of the battery, charge it or discharge it according to whatever objective the asset owner or manager has, whether it be demand charge reduction, whether it be time of use optimization, or whether it be to optimize some regulatory incentive in terms of providing power back to the grid. That's where sometimes customization is required. So it really depends on the product.
And just last extension from that, notwithstanding your comments, John, about protecting balance sheets through the downturn, is there a need, a desire, or an opportunity to put some of your cash to work into these existing investments in the near term, either adding to your position in IWS or accelerating anything on the ETB side?
I would say there's certainly a willingness. Whether it's a need, I guess it becomes a need when you see the right opportunity in those spaces. But clearly, when we think about the medium to longer term and where the business is has opportunities to grow, we have opportunities within the core business with the existing product suite, with existing customers in existing markets. As we start to talk about some of these other industries, there may be things that we can do to flesh out either, you know, customer relationships, product offerings, markets we serve, et cetera. And so we would entertain those, absolutely. But again, I call it a willingness as opposed to feeling it's a need at the current moment.
Okay. Thanks for the color. Marcel, best of luck. Congratulations on the transition.
Thank you, Jeff.
There are no further questions at this time. I return the call back over to the presenters.
Thank you, everybody, and have a great weekend.
This concludes the conference. Thank you, everyone. You may now disconnect.